History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should never go untold. And they don't have to go untold if we're willing to invest a little time and attention, to ask some questions, and be patient enough to listen as long-buried memories rise to the surface. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And when we start out with those kind of intentions, it really is amazing what ends up happening, because not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but as you know, we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This coming Tuesday, December 7th, will be the 80th anniversary of the infamous surprise attack on Pearl Harbor and other military installations that ultimately launched America into World War II. You might have guessed that that would be the focus of today's show, and your guess would be correct. There will be an 80th anniversary commemoration on Oahu, of course, this week, and unfortunately, the COVID era means the number of people allowed to be there is limited, but there will be quite a few World War II veterans on hand, including at least 9 who have shared their stories here on Hometown Heroes. Today, you're going to pick up some perspective from 7 different veterans who were on the island of Oahu that day. Separate vantage points that together help us understand just how chaotic that day of infamy was. You can link to complete full-length original interviews with each of the 7 online at hometownheroesradio.com. Some of these men are still with us, some are no longer here, but their stories live on. And the composite picture that they're going to help form over the next hour here on the radio will definitely help you understand. Let's begin with a man who had quite a unique perspective from an observation tower that is still standing 80 years later at Pearl Harbor. Here's what Delton Wally Walling saw from his unique perch just before 8 a.m. on December 7th, 1941.
It's a beautiful day, and all at once, overhead, we've got planes, high planes, low planes, all coming in on us. Oh, must be a big maneuver today. Those orange balls up there is not ringing the bell yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ringing the bell even when we see those black objects dropping out of those planes.
It hasn't hit you yet that this is enemy.
That isn't it. Mm-hmm. And when the bomb went off on Fort Allen and all planes are exploding everywhere, we know we're in war.
And you saw that clear as day.
I watch it all. I'm the only one that can tell you the Pearl Harbor story, and this is the reason why. I'm looking down on everything. You're on a ship, mm-hmm. and that ship gets hit by a torpedo or what? Who sees that? The ship itself. That's all. They can't see beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking down on everything. But remember this, you can't see it all at one time because everything's blowing up at one time.
Right.
So you can't even follow it.
Mm-hmm.
All you can just pick up in pieces. See?
Well, and that's what, you know, on this program over the years, I've heard from guys who are on a lot of different ships or on land while this is happening, and they have those little slivers of the puzzle that they saw from their perspective. And your perspective is intriguing, and what you're saying is you're the last guy left that was in that tower and looking from that spot where you could see each one of these things that's happening. You're, what, 19, 20 years old?
19.
What in the world was going through your head?
I'm froze to the rail because the first thing that happened just before the plane started dropping was Hickam Field is blowing up. It's right behind me. I'm looking, oh, maybe a couple minutes or something before the raid started right over Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So Hickam Field is destroyed immediately. Now I'm froze to that rail because I have joined the greatest Navy of all times. And here it is being blown up in my face in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm devastated. Because if they can do that in 10 minutes, what else is coming?
Right.
And scuttlebutt is everywhere. They've already landed on the other side, and oh man, you don't know what to believe. The Arizona never blew up till 8:06. It's the last ship that blew up. Because your California sunk, Oklahoma's rolled over, the Utah's rolled over, and the West Virginia's got hit by at least 7 torpedoes. It's a mess. It went straight down. We can't do anything. There's no way of us doing a thing.
With thousands and thousands of military personnel on Oahu that day, there are so many different vantage points. And we get another one from a Kansas native who had actually traveled to Oahu aboard the USS Arizona. Eugene Leonard's assignment was working on planes at Eva Field, a Marine Corps air base west of Pearl Harbor. Did you have any idea before December 7th? Was there any concern that the Japanese might attack?
None at all. Absolutely surprised.
Tell me about that Sunday morning. What's the first thing you remember?
I remember the airplanes flying about, 8-10 miles away. Coming in, they looked different, but they was tiny. You know, that's quite a ways away. And I could see torpedoes hanging halfway below the airplane. The nose would be pointed down from the airplane. That's what they used to sink the different ships.
So when you first saw the airplanes, did you think...
We discussed it. You know, all the guys, we stand college, you know, your mom. Yeah. But, hey, what's going on? Hey, them, they look different. And as soon as that's over, of course, I had to go to my guard station. And when we went to the guard station, when we was attacked for this base, see, this is the first airplane come over our way, attacked the truck that I was in.
When you first saw those planes, did you think they were American planes?
Oh, no. I could see that red thing.
Even when they were far away, though? I mean, when you saw them on the horizon?
I didn't know what there was when they were far away. We didn't know what there was.
So did it start to trigger maybe something's wrong here?
No, I really didn't know something was wrong at all until we got in the ring and that plane come after us. Then I knew something was wrong. We knew right then, but it's already too late. We didn't have anything to do.
So you and another guard are driving a truck. How big a truck?
Just a pickup with a flatbed.
So you don't have much protection?
No protection whatsoever.
And the very first plane that comes in that's firing...
At that truck. They broke off from the battles. They was coming in from the north side of the island and across. And we could see them going across to Pearl Harbor. And you see, they just broke off. They had to get our airplanes too, you know.
Yeah.
And they broke off. Say there was Schofield Barracks and Wheeler Armor Air, all them. They was attacking them all at the same time.
And you guys at your field had, what, about 40 or 50 airplanes?
Well, there was 3 squadrons, and we only had about 8 in our squadron. And then there's dive bombing, a fighter squadron, and another a scout bomber squadron.
And so some of those planes are planes that, had you guys been able to get them in the air, could have fought with the Japanese planes and inhibited the damage.
The rear gunners and all that would be after them, and the fighter planes and everything.
But they were able to destroy them all right there on the ground.
They destroyed them on the ground. No ammunition anywhere.
And they almost destroyed you. So your truck, the Japanese plane is firing machine gun bullets right at you. You got out of the truck. And
I got out of it, so did the other guy.
And you had an idea of where a safe place to go would be. Tell me what that was.
Well, that was the big building where the morning mask was, where the holes was in the ground.
So this Eva Field had been used in World War I with dirigibles, inflatable airships.
Right.
And so they had these big hangars, and there were holes ground. There
was no big hangars. There was no hangars whatsoever.
So what was the purpose of this building you were hiding in?
Well, it's just machinery to cables up and down for the tower.
But you knew that in that building, as kind of a leftover of the old technology, there were these big holes in the ground.
Right. There's just holes in the ground.
How big around were they?
Oh, it wasn't round. It was long, probably that wide.
4 or 5 feet?
4 feet, 5 feet long.
So you and the other guy run in there and jump in those holes?
He didn't follow me. No. I just went for the, I don't know where he went.
So you just knew that's a safe place to go?
I was trying to get away from the bullets is all I knew.
So you hopped down in this hole. Was there anything else in that hole?
No.
Nothing crawling on you?
Well, like I say, scorpions was all over the place, and was and spiders and all that. So that's about all that's around.
So you preferred a bug bite to a Japanese bullet?
I knew the holes were there. See, I was second in rank. The number one sergeant in rank was killed probably 75 feet from where I was at. He got out there for... grabbed a fire extinguisher where the airplanes was, and he got shot.
Were you guys pretty defenseless at that point?
We was defenseless.
You didn't have anti-aircraft guns or anything like that?
We didn't have anything, no ammunition or anything.
So the best thing you could have done is what you did, because there was nothing you were going to do to the Japanese. You just had to make sure you survived. What was it like to be in that hole? And what were you hearing? What was happening around you?
All I heard was the rattle of the building of the machine gun fire hitting it. I didn't know whatever. I just ducked down all I could in that to dodge everything. I happened to know that was there because it was right close to my work area, see. The airplanes that I worked on was right outside of that, right close to where I was at. But I just ducked down in the hole, see. Because I happened to know they was there.
How long you think you were in the hole?
5-10 minutes? I don't know. I have no idea. I was ducked down and trying to, you know, work as much safety. And as soon as that building stopped rattling, I run to the guardhouse to get my rifle. And no ammunition, of course. And the truck took us. It'd come back to the guardhouse and took us to the ammunition sheds. And I got in there with a .45, broke the lock. And we loaded ammunition as fast as we could. They was in a cloth deal that full of 30-06 ammunition. And we was just that ammunition to people. Everyone was grabbing rifles and everything else. And, of course, then we got machine gun ammunition and all that. But, hey, the machine guns, the stands all broke up. We armed ourselves just as fast as we could, of every way we could, because we figured they was coming in for a landing, which they did not do.
Yeah, so you guys really weren't prepared for that initial attack. And then after that, you prepared and nothing else happened.
We prepared for an attack by land troops, because that's the only thing we could do.
And the reason I asked you how long you were in the hole, and you said 5 or 10 minutes, something tells me it felt like a lot longer than that.
I don't know, because it's not very long. It doesn't take very long to set the airplanes on fire. They're just sitting on the ground everywhere, lined up. Mm-hmm. And, hey, they could come down hitting them airplanes and fire, they got them on fire so fast you can't believe it, because it all lined up.
What was going through your mind as you were in that hole?
I don't have any idea. It was just that I was trying to save myself. I didn't know what was going on except that I was being shot at.
When the building stopped rattling and you came out of there, what did you see? What was the scene around you?
Airplanes on fire, just piles of planes are burning. All that fuel had to be burnt. See, it's burning everywhere.
So many things were burning on Oahu 80 years ago, but out of those flames emerged a united American resolve that would help defeat the forces of tyranny in World War II. It's time for our first break, but when we come back, another military installation on Oahu that day, Hickam Field. Hear from one man on the ground there on that day of infamy, as well as one who happened to be trying to land there just as the attack was underway. Before we're done, we'll hear firsthand perspectives from Battleship Row as well. This special Pearl Harbor 80th anniversary edition of Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. When life throws you curveballs, you have to be adaptable, or at least have a good pinch hitter on the bench who knows how to handle a curve. When it comes to your business, Provident Payments is the best teammate you could ever have. Perhaps it helps that many of the leaders for one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America are former ballplayers. Contactless payments, online ordering, point of sale, you name it, Provident Payments knows it. Now, you could get some of these services from one of the big banking companies, but you're never going to get the kind of personalized service that Provident Payments delivers every day. 24/7 solution-based tech support. When your ability to process payments goes haywire in any way, time is money. So would you rather wait on hold for who knows how long, or would you like to have a direct line you can call for immediate help? That's where a good teammate comes in. Learn more about bringing Provident Payments onto your team at providentpayments.com. They really are one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. That website again, providentpayments.com. I always love hearing from listeners, and so many of you tell me you listen to Hometown Heroes while you're on the road. Nobody spends more time on the road than our friends in the trucking business. And if that's your business, I'm sure you know about Central Valley Trailer Repair. If you don't, you really should. Conveniently located near California's major transportation arteries, CVTR has stockpiles of parts waiting for you in Fresno and in Stockton, with experienced service technicians ready to handle even the most difficult of repairs. Central Valley Trailer Repair is an authorized Great Dane sales, parts, and service center, and you can always find a huge inventory of new and used semi-trailers for sale too. Dry freight, refrigerated, flatbed, whatever you're looking for, CVTR has you covered. How about 24-hour emergency service? You bet. What can't CVTR help you with? That's a question I can't answer, so you'll have to ask them yourself at 1-800-877-8444. That's 1-800-877-8444. The website, that's simple, cvtr.com. For Central Valley Trailer Repair, and tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.